Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 66, Pandraka, the False Vasudeva. Reading today, texts 23 and 24. I'll just read 23. We'll do 24 together since that's the main verse we'll be talking about. So, reading 23. Evam matsiranam hatva pandrakam sasakam hari dwarakam avishat sirhyayar giyamana katamrita. Having thus killed envious Pandraka and his ally, Lord Krishna returned to Dwarka. As he entered the city, the citizens of heaven chanted his immortal nectarian glories. So, text 24 together, responsively. Sanicham Bhagavat Jana Pradvastakila Bandhana Vibranascha Hare Rajan Svarupam Tanmayo Bhavat Sanicham Bhagavad Jhana Pradvastakila Bandhana Vibranascha Hare Rajan Svarupam Tanmayo Bhavat Sanicham Bhagavad Jhana Pradvastakila Bandhana Vibranascha Hare Rajan Svarupam Tanmayo Bhavat. Ladies. So, he, Pandraka, Nityam, constant, Bhagavat, upon the Supreme Lord, Jhana, by his meditation, Pradvasta, completely shattered, Akila, all, Bandhana, whose bondage, Vibrana, assuming, Cha and Hare of Lord Krishna, Rajan, O King Parikit, Swarupam, the personal form, Tatmaya, absorbed in consciousness of him. Abhavat, he became. Translation purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. By constantly meditating upon the Supreme Lord, Pandrika shattered all his material bonds. Indeed, by imitating Lord Krishna's appearance, O King, he ultimately became Krishna conscious. Purport. Srila Prabhupada writes as follows in Krishna. As far as Pandrika was concerned, somehow or other he was always thinking of Vasudeva by falsely dressing himself in that way. And therefore Pandrika achieved Swarupya, one of the five kinds of liberation, and was thus promoted to the Vaikuntha planets, where the devotees have the same bodily features as Vishnu, with four hands holding the four symbols. Factually, his meditation was concentrated on the Vishnu form, but because he thought himself to be Lord Vishnu, he was offensive. After being killed by Krishna, however, that offense was also mitigated. Thus, he was given Sarupya liberation, and he attained the same form as the Lord. Om Jnanatimanandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshur Nikamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Panchakopa Tubhyascha Kripasindhudevacha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So we know that there are five kinds of liberation that are offered. Salokya, going to the same planet as the Lord. Samipya, becoming an associate of the Lord. Sarupya, having the same form. Sharsti, having the same opulences. And Sayuja, merging into the body or the effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's described the devotee will sometimes accept the first four. Residents of the Vaikuntha planet share many of these attributes of the four types of liberation. But the devotee will never accept the fifth kind of liberation, Sayuja, merging into the effulgence of the Lord. This impersonal liberation is considered to be a hellish condition for the devotees. But at any rate, Pandrika received this Sarupya liberation Vaikuntha, gaining the same form as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Throughout his life, he meditated upon this form. He tried to imitate this form. He had his four arms with the four symbols of Vishnu. So because of this intense meditation, he was that was his thinking about the forearm form of Vishnu. But unfortunately, because he also thought that he was God, it was offensive. Now, interestingly enough, I was looking back at the purports in the beginning of the chapter and in the Acharya's books. It appears as though he actually did think he was Vasudeva. He wasn't just a demoniac person wanting the power of Vasudeva. He was pretty convinced that he was. In fact, words like foolish and crazy are used by Acharyas to describe his mentality, because he was someone who was quite a little bit delusional. He had actually convinced himself and his followers that he was indeed Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So because he had this offensive mentality, but Prabhupada mentions that because he was killed by Krishna, even that offensive mentality was mitigated. So he did receive that Sarupya liberation of having the form of the Lord. So this is not uncommon. We see that there are many demons who have been killed by the Lord and received liberation. You can think of demons like Agasura, where they saw the spirit soul rising out from his head. Of course, Shishupal merged directly into the body of the Lord. Even Putana was not given just impersonal liberation, was actually given the role of a mother, because she approached Krishna in that way as a mother. And because even though Krishna killed her because she was a demon, she received a very, very high form of liberation, a personal form of liberation in the spiritual world. So, and then of course we have Kamsa. It's described that after Kamsa was killed in the arena, that Kamsa also received liberation. Why? Because he was constantly meditating upon Krishna. It describes that day and night he was always thinking, when will Krishna kill me? So even though he was thinking, when will Krishna kill me and Krishna is my enemy, he was nevertheless thinking of Krishna. And then, of course, by being ultimately killed by Krishna, he was given liberation. So this is an interesting point about how Krishna deals with devotees and with demons, and how sometimes Krishna's dealings with demons seem to be almost on an equal level. So this question has come up, of course, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the seventh canto. In fact, the first chapter of the seventh canto is called "The Supreme Lord is Equal to Everyone." And in this chapter, Maharaj Parikshit is asking Shukadeva Goswami, why is it that Krishna is said to be impartial, that he's equal to all, but yet we see in so many of these pastimes, and just finishing the sixth canto, that he seems to be favorable to the demigods. He seems to take the side of the demigods against the demons. So how can we say that Krishna is impartial? Well, Shukadeva Goswami said, that's a great question, and let me answer that. So in that chapter, he answers the question. He talks about how Krishna is awarding everyone according to their desires, according to one's karma, and the laws of material nature, that everybody is getting equally what they deserve. And then he turns the conversation to, as they often do in the Bhagavatam, tells a story about another story, and somebody also asks this. And sometimes you go back several steps in these, trying to figure out the original speaker. But in this one, he simply refers to a conversation between Maharaj Yudhishthira and Narada Muni. And that happened right after the incident in the Rajasuya sacrifice where Krishna finally kills Shishupal. And in front of Maharaj Yudhishthira and all the assembled devotees there, apparently, they all saw with their own eyes that Shishupal merged, the spirit soul merged directly into the body of Krishna, right? So Maharaj Yudhishthira says, how can this be? Here's a demon. He blasphemed you. He fought you. He hated you. He seemed to like be totally inimical to you. But yet you granted him liberation. He merged into your body. Well, so then a long conversation ensued. And in fact, at that point, it was mentioned how Shishupal was, in fact, Jai or Vijay, one of the gatekeepers, and that whole story. And then, of course, we get into all the different starting with Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu, the three incarnations of Jai and Vijay as demons. So that's all described. But besides the fact that they were just a special case, there was also the philosophical point of how that meditation upon the Lord led to their liberation, even despite the fact that they were actually devotees and a special case of Jai and Vijay. And there's some really nice verses in that chapter. 26, then I'm going to read 31 and 32. This is Narada Muni speaking to Maharaj Yudhishthira. He says, therefore, by enmity or devotional service, by fear, by affection, or by lusty desire, by all of these or any one of them, if a conditioned soul somehow or another concentrates his mind upon the Lord, the result is the same for the Lord, because of his blissful position is never affected by enmity or friendship. And later, my dear King Yudhishthira, the gopis by their lusty desires, Kamsa by his fear, Shishupal and other kings by envy, the Yadus by their familiar relationship with Krishna, you Pandavas by your great affection for Krishna, and we the general devotees, Narada just calls himself a general devotee, by our devotional service have attained the mercy of Krishna. Somehow or another, we must consider the form of Krishna very seriously. Then, by one of the five different processes mentioned above, one can return home back to Godhead. So the idea here is that any contact with Krishna is beneficial. Any meditation upon Krishna is beneficial. Any way that somebody can somehow or another associate with Krishna, that is going to be to their great benefit. Because Krishna is all good, Krishna is all pure, that association with him purifies everyone. And one is benefited if one is thinking of Krishna in any way. Just as Kamsa was fearful or Shishupal was envious, still, because the focus of that fear or that envy was Krishna, therefore they were benefited. However, this is not the recommended process. It is not recommended that we are envious or fearful of Krishna. No, rather, it is recommended that service should be in a more favorable mood. In the purport to that verse 26, Srila Prabhupada, it's a very fairly long purport and very, very nice description of this principle, and Prabhupada quotes many verses, but just to read a couple lines in that purport. Prabhupada says, from this verse, one should not conclude that because Krishna is unaffected by favorable prayers or unfavorable blasphemy, one should therefore blaspheme the Supreme Lord, referring to Shishupal. This is not the regular principle. Bhakti yoga means anukulyena krishnanushilanam. One should serve Krishna very favorably. That is the real injunction. So this anukulyena krishnanushilanam is a very, very important principle, of course, that we find in 1.1.11 of Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, the Paribhashya Sutra, that explains the process of Uttama Bhakti. And that pure devotional service or Uttama Bhakti is explained having this principle of anukulyena krishnanushilanam. And of course, there's very extensive commentaries by Acharyas, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. And basically, they describe that krishnanushilanam means continuous service to Krishna. And of course, I'm paraphrasing pages and pages of purports here, but also that it must be done with favorableness or friendliness, which is anukulyena. So anukulyena means more than just pleasing to Krishna. It's kind of an interesting little aside here where Vishwanath says that a demon's fighting might be pleasing to Krishna, but it's not bhakti necessarily. And sometimes Mother Yashoda is not pleasing to Krishna when she puts him down and goes to take care of the yogurt that's burning on the over the stove, but that's pure bhakti. So in other words, the idea of something just being pleasing or not pleasing to Krishna is not so much the principle, it's the mentality of the person doing it. And the mentality of the devotee, the consciousness of the devotee, must be one where one is serving Krishna in a pleasing attitude. So the highest bhakti is basically continuous service to Krishna with a pleasing attitude or an attitude, a favorable attitude towards him. So this is what the devotee wants to achieve, that we're constantly serving Krishna, that we're always in this favorable mood towards Krishna, not envious of Krishna, you know, that we simply want to experience love and service to Krishna. And also, there's also the point here, of course, of liberation. Pandurka received liberation, that these other demons received liberation. So you might think, is that on an equal level with the devotees? But not really. Liberation is not the same in itself as bhakti. And so the devotee is not so much really interested in liberation, but really interested in bhakti. Of course, the desire for liberation is a natural thing. This material world, we experience suffering, we experience hardship, we experience so many difficulties. And people try to enjoy the material world in so many ways. They try to, through their senses and mind, find happiness, and often are very frustrated. So sometimes that frustration leads to a desire to become liberated from this material world. So sometimes transcendentalists, spiritualists, the jnanis will simply try to, let me somehow become liberated from the suffering condition of the material world. So it's not that we don't want that. The devotee also wants to be free from the suffering of the material world. The devotee also wants to be free from the modes of nature. The devotee also prefers not to take birth in this material world, in a material condition of life. But it is not the main attraction for the devotee. Liberation in itself is not really what we're striving for, because there is such greater pleasure for the devotee in the process of bhakti. Pure devotional service offers so much more than liberation that the devotee doesn't really take it as their main goal in life or so seriously. In the Hari Bhakti Sahudaya, the verse is, my Lord, O Supreme, simply by understanding you or seeing you, the pleasure which we derive is so great that the pleasure of Brahmananda becomes insignificant. So that liberation is an insignificant pleasure compared to bhakti. And of course, the famous expression, water in the footprint of a calf is the comparison. There's that much pleasure in this little footprint, little handful of water, compared to the ocean of the pleasure that is experienced in bhakti yoga, in pure devotional service. So this is what the devotee is striving for. And in fact, liberation is considered to be automatic. Liberation is simply a byproduct of the process of bhakti. This is explained by Haridas Thakur. I didn't write down the verse or the quote on it, but I think this is in the section when Haridas Thakur is explaining the glories of the holy name, and he's talking about Nam Basa and talking about how even the beginning stages of chanting are so powerful. Even in the clearing stage, one attains so much by the process of chanting. And he says there, liberation and extinction of the reactions of sinful life are two concomitant byproducts of chanting the holy name of the Lord. So the devotee chants the holy name of the Lord to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We chant the holy name of the Lord out of love of the Supreme, but by doing so, automatically, one becomes free from the suffering of material life, and automatically liberation is achieved. So that is not a goal of the devotee, but is something that happens automatically through the process of bhakti. Real liberation is devotional service. Real liberation means to achieve our spiritual position with Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, 10:6, there's a verse, Muktir Hitvanyata Rupam Surupena Vyavastiti. Liberation is the permanent situation of the form of the living entity after he gives up the changeable, gross, and subtle material bodies. Now, it's an interesting verse, because it's defining liberation in terms of devotional service, in terms of bhakti. We have this word, Rupam Surupena. In other words, it's about attaining one's spiritual form. It's not about formlessness or giving up one's, you know, body, giving one's up an identity to merge into the body of the Lord or merge into the effulgence of the Lord or the Brahma Jyoti, but it's a matter of obtaining one's spiritual form. Prabhupada explains this in the purport. He says, the material conditional bodies develop out of the living entity's forgetfulness of the relationship with Godhead. And during the course of the cosmic manifestation, the conditioned souls are given a chance to revive their original status of life with the help of revealed scriptures, so mercifully compiled by the Lord in his different incarnations. Reading or hearing of such transcendental literatures helps one become liberated even in the conditional state of material existence. All of the Vedic literatures aim at devotional service to the personality of Godhead, and as soon as one is fixed upon this point, he at once becomes liberated from conditioned life. So there are many important points in this purport of Srila Prabhupada, but one of them is that liberation is actually achieved in any stage of life. That even in this material existence, within this material body, if one is performing pure devotional service, one is considered liberated. It doesn't actually require a change of body even to be in the liberated stage. Because the liberated stage means simply that one has no more material desires and that all of one's activities, all of one's thoughts, all of one's words are directed to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And at that point, one is completely liberated. So for the devotee, whether they are in the material world or whether they are in the spiritual world is more or less the same, because they're experiencing the same liberated condition. Now, we may be thinking, sitting here today, well, that's very interesting for pure devotees. They probably experience this. You know, I believe that they do. I read it in the scriptures, but sometimes I don't feel so liberated myself, you know, in this material world. Actually, it is a fact that we are in a liberated condition. We may not be fully conscious of it, but we are. And Srila Prabhupada made this point, that if one is performing devotional service under the orders of the spiritual master, one is no longer under the same influence of the material modes of nature as before one was in that position, or for the non-devotee who is not performing devotional service. So it's a very, very, very special position that one occupies as a devotee of the Lord. One is no longer under the modes of nature. Now, you might say, well, I sometimes do feel a little affected by the modes of nature, and of course we do, because we're not in the pure stage of devotional service, but we are attaining that stage. We are in the process of that stage. We are involved and engaged in the pure process of bhakti yoga as given by the pure devotee. So from that, in that respect, you know, we are involved in that, and we are liberated. There's at least one, or if not two or three letters I've seen that Srila Prabhupada said to his devotees that you are pure devotees. You are all pure devotees. No. First, he said to one devotee, he said, you are a pure devotee, and he was feeling a little bit good. And he said, you are all my disciples are pure devotees. So it wasn't something particularly unique or special about that one particular person. But Prabhupada was making an important point. No, of course we're not fully purified of all of our material desires, but we are pure devotees in the sense that we're performing pure devotional service, the process of pure devotional service. We're not performing something that has any tinge of karma or jnana. This is the pure bhakti that is given to us by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the six Goswamis, and our line of acharyas. So it's very, very special. And of course, now we have to attain that. We have to actually live up to that. Just like Prabhupada gave us Brahman initiation. Brahman means one who has realized Brahman. Well, maybe we haven't realized, but Prabhupada explained, we're Brahmins in training. You know, we were given the opportunity to become actual Brahmins. You know, so that's somewhat what it is. We're like pure devotees in training. We're given the opportunity of pure bhakti to be able to attain that. And if somehow or another we're fortunate enough or serious enough to be able to just stay in this process of Krishna consciousness year after year, and it will take some time, I can assure you. I think I've said this before, but when I first became a devotee, you know, and of course Prabhupada was explaining all about pure devotional service, and we're reading about all these pure devotees, and we see Srila Prabhupada's a pure devotee, that we had absolutely no doubt about. And as we would talk amongst ourselves as brand new devotees, and you know, what do you think it'll probably take, what, 3 years, 5 years before we become pure devotees? And believe it or not, I had those kind of, you know, so we were a little naive. You know, we a little bit underestimated the powers of material energy, the modes of material nature, and just our conditioning of many, many lifetimes in this material world. So because there's been so many lifetimes of conditioning, it will take a little time to actually fully realize this position of pure bhakti, pure devotional service. But nevertheless, we are on that path and we are on the way to that. And it's not that we are simply suffering here in the material world, waiting for some time in future lifetimes or 50 years from now till that comes. No, the devotee experiences the relief of the suffering of material life as one of the first aspects of Krishna consciousness. That relief from the suffering of material life is experienced very soon by even neophyte devotees, you know, because we understand the absolute truth. It's a very, very special thing. I mean, how many people on this planet, how many people in the city, well, Alachua is not a good example, because a very high percentage of the residents of Alachua understand the absolute truth. You know, but let's say the residents of Florida, of the 20 million people, what percentage of those people understand the absolute truth? Understand who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? It's kind of a rare thing, but it's a very wonderful and special thing, because once you have that knowledge of what is the truth, and not only an abstract idea of this absolute truth, but an understanding of the process of how to get there, of how to attain that. And we do experience the pleasure of bhakti, of devotional service along the way. Nobody can deny that there is great pleasure in the chanting of the holy name, or just seeing the form of the deities. Doesn't that sometimes just make you happy? You know, just to see the beautiful deities. So many wonderful things. I have experiencing a wonderful feast. I certainly feel happy. You know, the power of prasadam. And what to speak of association devotees. So there are so many positive things that devotees are experiencing even before we reach that stage of pure devotional service and are able to enter very, very deeply into our relationship with Krishna. Because we are experiencing our relationship with Krishna. We experience our relationship with Krishna through the devotees, through prasadam, through the holy name, through our service. Just through our devotional service every day, we are experiencing some relationship, and there's some reciprocation with Krishna that's there. So this process Srila Prabhupada gave us is very wonderful, same process given by the Acharyas, by the Six Goswamis, by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so we have this wonderful opportunity to engage in Krishna consciousness, and we need to appreciate it, I guess, take it very seriously. Okay, I'll stop at that point in a few minutes if there's any discussion. Let's Maharaj first, then we'll go to the back.
I'd like to say that they're questions. I guess the only way I can make them questions is make a comment and say, well, what do you think? I guess they're basically comments. But one is a simple point that there's an incident with Srila Prabhupada that he, I don't have the exact detail, but he was basically challenged, why don't you go back to Godhead now? How do you know you're going there? And Prabhupada said, try to understand, I have purchased a ticket. It's like if you're in the airport and you have a ticket for France, say, it's as, you're as good as there, it's assuming a safe journey, you're as good as there. So that could be compared with all of our situations, that we bought the ticket, so to speak. The other one is that the I think a distinction needs to be made between imitating God, even as good as Pondraka, actually thinking you're God, and at the same time, the position of Pondraka, his fortunate position. I mention that because if we're just like in the generic mode in the material world of trying to imitate God and even thinking that I'm some kind of God, it doesn't rate, it doesn't cut the mustard to get us any kind of liberation. Because if that were the case, then in those verses that you were alluding to, or the, you were leading up to those verses, you actually recited the English, where different categories of personalities are mentioned, and due to their avesha, their intense meditation, they all receive the mercy of the Lord. But then the third of those three key verses there is katamopi navena syat. So King Vena is excluded.
That's right, that's the next verse. Yeah.
He doesn't get the mercy. He doesn't get the mercy. But at the same time, one could say, well, he's just like most people, you know, in the material world. He was thinking that he's the supreme. You would even say, the king should be worshipped. Why are you worshipping anyone else? Just worship me. So there is that distinction that it's very special to be actually contemplating the form of the Lord as Kamsa did or as Pondraka was doing. And we don't, because I know in the 60s, we, especially under the influence of hallucinogens, it was a very common thing to actually go into the Pondraka mode. And but not as good as Pondraka. And I know in my own case, at 26 Second Avenue, when the devotees were having kirtan, I mean, I guess it's embarrassing to admit, but there were times when I thought the kirtan was for me. I was thinking, oh, thank you. I would just sit there and, you know, wouldn't change. I'd just sit there and accept the kirtan. You know, something like that. It's pretty far out. But that didn't quite... rate, actually. Actually, that mentality got me into a lot of trouble, actually. Hare Krishna.
But look at the purifying process of that kirtan, because here you are, Maharaj.
Mercy case.
Yeah. I think that's a very good point, and I remember I gave a class about a week and a half ago, and I think that was one of the main topics that we were talking about then, was how the imitation of Krishna is very common, and we see... you know, we see all these, you know, very second-rate, you know, impersonalists and scientists and philosophers who are all saying I'm God or I'm one with God, but they certainly, as you say, they don't really have it together like someone like Pondraka, who actually got, you know, the forearms, the symbols, who really, it's in a sense, Pondraka was appreciating Krishna, right? He was appreciating Vasudeva, like, because he just thought he was. That was the downside. But yeah, you're right. Absolutely, these are special cases because they actually focus on Krishna. It wasn't just generic, I'm God, or I'm great, or I'm wonderful. They were actually Kamsa, Shishupal, Pondraka. They were concentrating on Krishna, on his form. So that is very different. You're right.
Just very quick, one case in point that many of us have the good fortune of going to Sri Vrindavan Dham over the years. And many of you may recall that there's one man who comes to the temple, and he has it pretty together. He completely dresses like Krishna. I mean, just like a peacock feather, and he comes in the temple room like that, and somehow he's allowed to do that. So for future study, what is his destiny? It's not to be speculated on now, but there is a case like that, right?
Okay, a couple of questions.
We discussed today how when you're actually a pure devotee, you don't care whether you're in the spiritual world or the material world. So is that sort of the gauge then? Because I'm sitting here thinking, I went out. I understand all that, but that's not how I really feel, knowing how the material world works and Maya works. I'd feel a lot more comfortable in the spiritual world. So will I come to that stage one time where I actually sit here and seriously feel like I don't care?
Sure you will. But Prabhupada said we should want to get out. As more neophytes, certainly we should want to get out. We should not want to stay here, because that's kind of because that's where it is. For us, the option would not be whether do I want to get out or, do I want to serve in the spiritual world? Ours is, do I want to get out or do I want to stay here and enjoy? So for us, it's better to want to get out, definitely. And, the other higher stage will develop. Yeah, Prabhu.
As we know, Krishna is none different from his name, his form, and himself. So in the case of Shishupal, Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. So what I think. He's involved in the killing of everyone. He says he comes as death and takes away everything. So Shishupal is a blasphemer. But why is there a difference in benediction when he's personally here and when he's not personally here? When there's no difference with him, he's not here.
So the question is, he was a blasphemer, but why did he get the benediction?
Why is there a difference in benediction when, like in Shishupal case, as a blasphemer, he was benedicted nicely.
Yeah.
But ordinarily, when somebody dies.
Why was he different than an ordinary blasphemer? You mean why he got there?
No, like when somebody dies ordinarily. Krishna is also involved in it.
Yeah.
So why is there a difference in benediction? Because an ordinary person dies will be Yam Yam Vabhi Smaran Bhava.
Yeah. So why did Shishupal get that?
Yes.
First of all, of course, he was in Krishna's presence. He was killed directly by Krishna. That's a huge difference, because generally, anyone that Krishna directly kills gets liberation. And of course, finally, because of course Shishupal was one of the gatekeepers, was actually a pure devotee who was playing this part of a demon, in Krishna's Leela. So it's definitely a special case. Okay, last question, we should probably end. Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
I was thinking about this point of us being liberated, but on the way, that means we can be affected by Maya. If you look at it from the perspective of somebody who is not in devotional service, from the outside, they are judging us based on our conduct, you could say behavior. They're judging the process of devotional service, actually. They say, well, you say devotional service is this and devotional service is that, but I don't see anything improving in you. You're not effective. You have all kinds of problems. You've been doing this for so many years. And then they'll also point to, all kinds of issues in the past and so on and so forth. So they judge devotional service. They say that this is evidence that devotional service doesn't work. So how should one respond to that?
Wow, there's so many levels of that and ways that one could respond. First of all, I don't really accept the premise that, you know, we are just like everybody else and we have the same problems. And you know, because first of all, we see many devotees who have made nice spiritual advancement, who do exhibit very nice Vaishnava qualities and characteristics, and who have certainly become purified by their process. We see especially many senior devotees who, you know, who obviously the process has done something very profound for them, and has changed them. And I think for all of us who may not be as advanced, we feel internally the changes. We certainly feel, the thing is, we have many of the same problems, yes, but I would say that we have a solution to those problems, or at least a process that deals with those in a very different way. The stresses and anxieties and problems that are there in the material world, and they're going to be there for everyone as long as we're in this material world, I would venture to say that the devotee is not affected in quite the same way as the non-devotee, that we have answers for those things. We have processes of understanding them. We have, you know, we have a whole different frame of reference to the world and the meaning of things and the meaning of life. And so I certainly don't experience problems and stress and anxiety in the same way that I would before I was a devotee or as a non-devotee. Yeah, I'll give you an example. My contemporaries, we're all in our 60s, approaching 70, some of us, and our bodies are starting to fall apart, and we're all getting sick, and, right, you know, I mean, basically, you know, everybody, you know, all the sannyasis are at Ayurvedic clinics half their life, you know, or whatever, because everybody's getting, you know, but I find it's almost somewhat of a source of amusement when we discuss it. I mean, no one takes it. I find that the senior devotees don't take it real seriously. It's almost kind of like a joke. We understand this is the body. It's falling apart. Good thing we're not a body. We're getting out of it. You know, where I've experienced many older people approaching sickness, old age, and eventually death, and great anxiety and great disturbance. That's an example I see. It's a very different attitude of devotees. That's just one example. Yeah,
I got a personal question. You're a practicing mental health professional. Is that correct?
Not practicing so much, but I have been.
Okay, well, I don't know exactly what you do, but
I have a doctorate in psychology. Yes.
Okay, but so you don't. I see. Okay, so you're not a practitioner in
not so much.
Practical sense.
A little bit, but no.
Yeah. Okay. Well, my point was, it had you been. I mean, you know, maybe the point can continue. I mean, is this something that you would? I mean, if you come into contact with people, or perhaps people in that profession, shall we say? Mm-hmm. Who come into contact with people who are mentally disturbed. I mean, yeah. Krishna consciousness is the solution, presumably, to their problem. I mean,
here's a solution.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it must be, surely.
Oh, certainly.
So it ought to be more widely promulgated, or perhaps, promoted.
In fact, I'll answer that very directly from the perspective that you presented in. My experience with working with devotees with emotional and psychological issues over the years is the ones that are actually are invested in Krishna consciousness, invested in spiritual practice, do better. Much more, you know, that they do well. The Krishna, you can see that there is, you know, there is reciprocation from Krishna, and they are able to really do better. And devotees that are not so involved in their spiritual life, or their sadhana is weak, they continue to struggle more with emotional and psychological issues. I mean, I'm not saying 100%. You know what I mean? These things, very individual, and I don't want to make generalizations too much, but I will say that, you know, devotees that do focus on their Krishna consciousness and on their sadhana tend to do better. Yes. Absolutely agree. Okay. And on that note, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.